in Cascadia. You're listening to your community radio station, KBOO Portland, Oregon, 90.7 FM. Today is Thursday, July 23rd, 2009, and this is Air Cascadia, long on content, short on time. I'm Chris Andre.
And I'm William Delta.
Today is the day in Coos Bay. Grassroots activists go up against the LNG industry's big guns.
While you weren't looking, biomass has been seeping into Cascadia.
And an amendment to a major defense policy bill makes it legal to carry concealed across state lines. That's what I call a defense policy.
Portland area weather cloudy this morning, then clearing with high around 78. Tonight, getting cloudy again, lows around 57. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy in the morning, and then gradual clearing, high around 85.
And first, we go to news from around Cascadia. Today is one of those potential turning points in the Coos Bay LNG timeline. Local grassroots activists, no money, no lawyers, just raw outrage, go up against the arrayed might of Texas oil money. Jody McCaffrey is my guest today. Jody will be pretty much the sole representative of environmental interests at today's event. Good morning, Jody.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being with us again today. So what's going to happen at 1:30 in Coos Bay?
There's a hearing on the remand issues that we won at the Land Use Board of Appeals on the Jordan Cove facility, actually. And there's like three or four issues that we actually, that were remanded back to Coos County. They're having a hearing on those issues, and we're going back up against them on them.
Can you briefly describe for listeners why LNG is such a bad idea for Coos Bay? What are some of the pragmatic environmental obstacles to bringing this really bad idea to Oregon's coast?
Well, our particular siting, they'll bring these ships in the size of aircraft carriers very close, like with less than a mile to our population. And they're locating the facility in a red tsunami zone, and the tanks will be sitting on dredging spoils at the end of the airport in the air flight traffic pattern. It's absolutely one of the worst siting locations probably in the United States. And of course, we're rural, we're poor, we don't have big-time attorneys. Today I'm going to be actually going up against their high-dollar attorneys on my own. I'm just a citizen trying to fight the fight.
How do you manage to do that? How do you continue the struggle against LNG with basically no resources other than your own?
Well, everyone that works that helps in this is volunteering. We do raise funds for our legal fight, which we do through an organization called Flow. They've agreed to have a fund for us so that when people want to donate money, it's tax deductible and it goes into their fund. And then if we need it for legal matters, we use it for that. But we try to use it sparingly. We can't fight all these fights because we don't have that much money. So if anybody wanted to help, that would be one way to do it, is donate, you know, to Flow.
Well, the facts on the ground, Coos Bay, Jordan Cove, is an incredibly disadvantageous site for an LNG terminal. Not that there is any good site for an LNG terminal. Why do you suppose they chose that particular place?
I think they chose this place and also the places in Astoria because it's rural communities that don't have a lot of money, and they believe they can buy their way through the permit process, and so far that's proved to be, you know, they've been successful at that. In California, they proposed these. They've all been derailed, but they've had huge outpouring from environmental groups, and there's a lot more funds down there to fight these kind of issues than there is up here.
Thanks so much for that. We wish you all the best. Once again, give that website where people can support your efforts if they like.
Well, our website is www.citizensagainstlng.com, and from that website you can link to other websites that you can donate to. We actually, you can send a check made out to Flow to our address, which is P.O. Box 1113 in North Bend, Oregon, 97459, and that will go, we forward it on to them. If you want to donate a tax-deductible donation to our legal fund. And it's not the best of websites. This is all volunteer, you have to understand, and I'm not going to criticize anybody for volunteering.
Thanks so much for that, Jody. Jody's one of the lone citizens in Coos Bay who's standing up to the big natural gas interests. Thank you so much for that, Jody. And we'd like to invite you back to give us a report on what happens at today's hearing later.
Thank you.
It's buyer's remorse time, Portland. They made it sound so good, but growth at any cost is an investment in disaster. So far, we've racked up $65 million to pay for the I-5 bridge to Vancouver, and nothing has been built. Maybe that's good. Ultimately, it will be worth many times that amount to put the brakes on unrestrained growth. Then why is it always the anti-tax contingent that's always on the pro-growth side? By this time next year, the tab will hit $100 million, burning through money at the rate of $1 million a month. On both sides of the river, transportation leaders claim consensus for a 12-lane toll bridge, light rail, and 6 interchange rebuilds between Portland and Vancouver. Right, that's what they say.
The effort to halt LNG's armies of the night does not end at Bradwood Landing or Jordan Cove, for that matter. Warrington is in the crosshairs as well. On Tuesday, the Port of Astoria Commission once again considered and delayed a decision to renew its controversial lease for the Oregon Liquefied Natural Gas Project. With us today to talk about the development, no pun intended, is Olivia Schmidt. Good morning, Olivia.
Good morning, Chris.
Thanks for being back with us today. So Warrington is on the news.
Yes. You know, we talk a lot about Bradwood Landing LNG located upriver on the Columbia, and we talk a bit about Jordan Cove. There are 3 proposals in Oregon to site liquefied natural gas import terminals, and the third is Oregon LNG, which would be located within the city limits of Warrington on the Skipanon Peninsula. What's happening right now is it's a little bit complicated, but the state of Oregon owns the piece of land that Warrington LNG, or that Oregon LNG wants to be built upon. The state of Oregon has leased that piece of land to the Port of Astoria, who has then signed a sublease with Oregon LNG for that piece of land. The trouble is that the Port of Astoria is charging Oregon LNG the exact amount that they are paying to the state of Oregon. In other words, the Port of Astoria is not making a dime on the investment with Oregon LNG for this piece of land. And this piece of land is a very problematic piece of land. It's like the site at Jordan Cove. It's entirely comprised of dredge spoils, which means it's a landmass that wasn't there 80 years ago and is completely made up of sand. It has no bedrock, and it, too, is in a red tsunami zone. So, you know, the Oregon LNG site in Warrington has its own particular complications. One of those we're seeing right now is that the Port of Astoria is not making a dime on the investment that Oregon LNG is making in that piece of land.
Is this a coincidence that all of a sudden there's interest again, there's the movement again on the Warrington front, just at a time when the Clatsop County commissioners are being recalled and there are hearings going on downstate in Coos Bay?
Yeah, you know, the LNG industry has many, many resources to expend. The citizens of Oregon also have a lot of resources to expend. It just happens that our resources are intelligence, passion, you know, relentless effort. They have a lot of money. We have a lot of heart, and I think we're going to win.
Thank you so much for that, Olivia. My guest has been Olivia Schmidt with Columbia Riverkeeper. Thanks again.
Thank you.
The Gov has signed a mare's nest of so-called climate bills that are being promoted as an attempt to level off greenhouse gas emissions in Oregon by next year. Nowhere in the whole package is there any sign of reasonable limits on growth. Instead, the 7 bills are intended to grow a green economy. Governor Kulongoski says, quote, "These policies secure Oregon's position as a national leader in climate change policy, while also expanding economic opportunity and clean green jobs across the state," unquote. Cap and trade is top of the list and close to the bottom in public opinion. Other ideas are far more popular, proving that even the rubes know a shell game when they see one.
Washington State's getting on the biomassacre hay wagon, or at least considering the road to ruin. This week, the state of Washington began looking for partners to develop 2 forest biomass projects, one on each side of the Cascades. the state legislator authorized Lands Commissioner Peter Goldmark to fire up a few pilot projects that would use the debris that remain after logging on state land as a source of fuel. This is supposed to be a sustainable type of energy. And that only, that of course is predicated on the fact that, logging will continue to produce this so-called waste. What's wrong with this picture? Tim Hermack with the Native Forest Council knows, and that's why we've invited him back to talk about this latest greenwash. Good morning, Tim. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Chris.
What's wrong with this picture?
Industry is stripping the states of their assets. They're strip mining nature. There is no waste in nature, and yet we're liquidating the lungs of the planet, the forests, the trees that produce our soil, air, and water, for money. We're burning trees for electricity. Teddy Roosevelt said it 100 years ago that the timber industry, timber barons, are liars, cheats, and thieves, and sometimes worse, and they'll take the last tree if they can persuade you to let them. This biomass scheme is one of the worst that they've ever come up with because it sounds relatively benign. We got rid of the wigwam burners 20, 30 years ago because they were polluting the air and making a mess of things. Industry said they would go out of business if we eliminated their wigwam burners, 24-hour-a-day teepees that burned excess wood or the waste from their milling production cycles. If you go to Google Earth, type in any area near you as an address, and then lift up, and you can see for yourself that the forests are not suffering from too little logging. The climate change and the watershed disasters that we're all suffering, the fisheries crashing, the climate crashing, it's because of too much logging. And the answer to climate change is not more burning. We're burning gas, oil, coal, and now we're going to burn trees too? It's still producing carbon. And even worse, it's eliminating even more of the lungs of the planet. The timber industry doesn't care about you, your grandkids, or their future survival. They care about this quarter's profits. If we want jobs, in particular, if we want jobs that the public subsidizes to the degree we do the timber industry, we would have jobs that build, that create something, that build something, make the country longer, stronger, better lasting, whatever. Not jobs that destroy. We might as well be subsidizing jobs at Dachau.
I don't think that's not by any stretch of the imagination too strong a term to use. Waste is not, there's no such thing as waste in a forest. That's where the forest comes from, the branches. Everything that touches the earth in a forest creates more trees. And that has been left completely out of the discussion. Biomass is yet another and perhaps one of the biggest greenwash shibboleths to come down the road in a long time. Thank you so much for that, Tim. My guest has been Tim Hermack with the Native Forest Council. Thanks again, Tim.
You're very welcome.
The Widmer Beer Making Brothers have sent a letter to Commissioner Dan Saltzman urging him to vote against a resolution that would authorize a direct filtration plant. The plant would cost about $400 million that we don't have and result in infrastructure we don't need, but that's business. There is a plan B. The Widmers suggest opting for a UV treatment plan that costs about a third as much, less than a third as much, if the city has to treat the water to meet federal requirements. The city needs to comply with federal standards for clean drinking water. Portland's in the process of getting a waiver, but it won't come in time.
Water issues really are casting a shadow over Regressive's plans to grow Cascadia to death. More and more frequently, stories appear that concern problems providing Mr. and Mrs. McMansion with water, agribusiness with water, and industry with water. At the bottom of the list is the ecosystem that life depends on. Now, residents of Banks have been asked to curtail outdoor water use and limit indoor water use because of hot weather and below normal rainfall. That's just common sense when it's hot. But then, so is limiting growth, and look where that's got us.
Yesterday, Nike's public relations people announced that it will stop using leather from cattle raised in Brazil's Amazon rainforest. The sportswear monger says the move is part of the company's commitment to curb deforestation. Brazilian leather suppliers have until next July 1st to create an ongoing traceable and transparent system to provide credible assurances that leather used for Nike products is from cattle raised outside the Amazon biome. So I see the leather suppliers aren't exactly being cut cold, but then there are probably places where labor's cheaper and there is even less oversight than in Brazil.
And briefly, finally, it's shootout at the OK Corral time in the Senate, and gun control and gun rights advocates are heading for another clash with a vote on a measure that would allow people with concealed weapons permits to carry those hidden weapons into other states. The gun proposal would make concealed weapons permits from one state valid in other states, as long as, of course, as the person obeys the laws in the other states. Yeah, right. It's tacked onto the defense spending legislation, so don't hold your breath.
This has been Headlines and Commentary from Air Cascadia for Thursday, July 23rd, 2009. Today's editor is Chris Andre. Engineering is Emily Young. The KBOO Interim AM News and Public Affairs Director is Trillian Shannon, sitting in for Kathleen on sabbatical. I'm Liam Delta.
And I'm Chris Andre. You're listening to member-supported KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM. Your support and your support only keeps us subverting the dominant paradigm. Thank you so much, members.
Coming up next, flashpoints, reports from Tegucigalpa and Mexico about the military coup in Honduras. Also, an interview with Dar Jamal, the author of The Will to Resist, Soldiers Who Refuse to Fight in Iraq and Afghanistan.
Thanks for listening and have a good day.